This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
It is Veterans Day, and we always try to feature a conversation with a veteran or two, and we are highlighting the Sub-Mariners, the Grand Marshals of this year's parade, and we're taping this in advance. Ken Earls, one of the Sub-Mariners, thanks for being on, Ken.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So, you are down in the Eagle Point area, and talk about your military service and back in general, how you got into the military.
Well, I was going through a local community college. Back then, it was called a junior college. Completed 1 year, didn't do very well. Started my second year and realized I really didn't want to do that. So I went down to the admissions office, told them I'm withdrawing, went straight to the recruiter's office and joined the Navy.
And what year was that? So
that was 1961.
Wow. So
I know.
You didn't really plan a lot ahead on this, it sounds like.
Well, I had been thinking for a long time. There was another fellow who was one of my classmates who was 3 years older than me. He was a friend of my brother's, and when he left high school, he joined the Marines for 3 years, came back to junior college, and I always envied him because he was so much more mature than the group that I ran around with. We were all immature young boys running around playing silly games instead of studying, and my brother's friend was studious and doing well, and he was reflecting the maturity that came from having served for some time in the military.
So where did you live when you went to high school?
In Midland, Michigan.
Okay. So you joined the Navy. What happened after that?
Well, it was so darn interesting. I went down to, took Greyhound bus down to Detroit and going through the induction process with maybe 100 or 150 other young men. And we did doing physical exams and testing us on different aspects. And during a lull in the afternoon, somebody came and called out, "Earls, where are you?" Earls, I raised my hand. He said, "Come here, follow me." So I followed him into this big office with a big desk, and there was this old guy behind the desk with white hair, and obviously he was an old man. And so he said, "Earls, you did pretty well on your test." I said, "Okay, good." He said, "How would you like to go into the submarine service?" And I said, "You mean actually serve on a submarine?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, I'd like to do that." And that was it. That, from before I was even sworn in, I had volunteered for the submarine service. And so from that point on, my whole time was focused on training for and becoming a submarine sailor.
Wow. So what happened after that?
Well, I had volunteered to join the Navy for a 4-year term. That quickly turned into a 2-year extension, so I had a 6-year commitment. I found out later the reason for the 2-year extension was they were going to put me through a year of training for the nuclear power program. And that was a big deal. Very, very intense, very informative. And after that, I went on to some other specialized training for another 4 months. So of the 2 years that I extended, I had 16 months of specialized training to prepare me for serving on the submarines or on the new nuclear power submarines.
Wow. And that was at a time that this was a kind of a brand new thing, right?
This was in the early stages, yes, of the nuclear power. In fact, my first assignment was on a diesel electric submarine that had served in World War II. And so I spent 8 months on a submarine, diesel electric, in San Diego, went through the qualification program to come to become a qualified submariner. And once I was done with that, they shipped me off to go to the nuclear power training school. And then after that, I was reassigned to a nuclear power submarine out of Charleston, South Carolina. And so I got to see the old world and then the new world with the new submarines. And it was it turns out at the time that was kind of routine. But now, in retrospect, there were a small number of people who really got to see the old and the new and serve on both of those. It was a great, great experience.
Wow. So now, did you just serve for the 6 years, or did you go longer?
No, I was happy to serve the 6 years, proud of it, but was also happy to get out. And in fact, I got an early out. Before I was going to get out of the Navy, I had applied for admission to one of the universities in Michigan, received my acceptance, and so I showed that to the Navy. And so I actually got out 2 months early so that I could start college on time with the normal registration process.
So talk about what it's like to be on a submarine, how many people were on some of the ones that you were in, and just what that life was kind of like.
Well, the first one I was on, the World War II submarine, diesel-electric, we had about 80 to 85 people on board, and which was about typical for that kind of submarine. They had bunking for about 75 people, and so there were more people on board than there were bunks for. So there's a term in submarine service called hot bunking, and all the junior people who come aboard are assigned hot bunking. And what that means is, when it's time for you to go to sleep, you go find a bunk that's empty, and you just get in there and sleep out in that bunk until the guy who owns that comes back and he rustles you out, and you go find another bunk. So that's something that's unique, and I don't know if they do hot bunking anymore, but that was kind of common at the time.
Wow!
But also, you get assigned to a watch station as a junior person on board my first submarine. I was part of the seaman gang, stood lookouts. It's all so interesting, and for a young man, 19, 20 years old, it's just a great, great experience.
So when you were out there, how long would you be on a submarine at any given time?
Well, my first one, I was on it for 8 months, and we would go out of San Diego. We'd go out for two or three times. We'd go out for a couple of weeks. Typically, they were short outings. Later on, after I was assigned to the nuclear power submarine out of Charleston, we would be assigned to I was on an FBM, a Fleet Ballistic Missile Submarine. That's the one that carried the Polaris missiles. And they were designed to be at sea as long as possible. The problem with that is you can stay at sea longer than you can have the crew be satisfied with. So they would assign two crews, a gold and a blue and gold crew. So I was on the gold crew. For the Woodrow Wilson, we would fly into Spain, row to Spain, take over the submarine from the blue crew, and we had 30 days of retrofit and maintenance work, and then we would go to sea, and we would go to sea for, on average, 60 days. So you'd go out of port, submerge, and go to your assigned station. And about 60 days later, you come back and you surface right outside the port and come in and go through the switch over to the other crew. So on the nuclear power submarine, our average at sea time was 60 days, and that whole time we would be submerged.
Wow. I cannot possibly imagine being able to do that mentally. Did anybody ever struggle with that?
The process of qualifying to go on a submarine includes a lot of testing. There's a physical testing, intellectual testing, emotional testing, psychological testing. And when you're going through submarine school in New London, Connecticut, part of that includes the psychological and the emotional aspects. One of the tests is they put you in this pressure chamber, put about, I don't remember, it was 8 or 10 people in there lined up along benches. And they shut the hatch, and then they start running in high-pressure air in there to run the pressure up kind of high. And there's a lot of noise. It's causing there's this condensation. There's moisture in the air, and there's so it looks smoky. And the observers are on the outside looking through portholes. And it's a test to see how you're going to handle the stress of that kind of environment. So while we were going through it, and you're trying to equalize the air pressure in your ears, you know, because the pressure is building up quickly, and you're equalizing. And there was a fellow two guys down from me who jumped up, and he said, "Stop! Let me out of here! Let me out of here!" Right now, they stopped the test. They decompressed the chamber, took him out. Everything was fine. Started the test again with him gone, and we proceeded on, and everything was fine. That man will have been set. They would have sent him on to surface Navy because he was not going to make it in the submarine service. That's the kind of thing they do. They run you through tests to sort out the people who aren't going to make it.
So while you were serving, you mentioned Spain. Where else are some of the places that you went?
Well, it's so darn interesting. If you go out and submerge for 60 days and then come back to your same port, you're not going anywhere. So we were submerged. Some of us knew where we were. Some of us never even bothered to ask. Doesn't matter because you're underwater anyway. So there you are. You're somewhere in the world underwater, and you are a launch platform for intercontinental ballistic missiles. So all we were there for is in the event we get the word that you have to launch some missiles, we were there to launch those missiles.
Wow.
And so we never went into any ports anywhere. Now, when I was on the boat in San Diego, the old boat, again, we never went anywhere. We would go out of San Diego, go up and down the coast. One time we went two-thirds of the way to Hawaii, and then came back, but we never went anywhere. So my exposure was San Diego and road to Spain.
So when they talk about seeing in the world, in your case, not so much.
There's not a lot to see when you're a few hundred feet underwater.
So when you're on duty, what were some of the things that you were doing?
Part of the process of getting on a nuclear submarine, there's several key jobs, and mine was, I had gone through nuclear power school, so I was in the engineering group. There's another group that are missile techs, and then there's navigation, and then there's sonar. So these are key positions that various people would stand watch on. So my watch station was back in the engineering spaces. I was on the throttle. And so imagine being on the throttle on a submarine whose duty station is to go out, go on station, be as quiet as possible and make as few noises and just cruise along quietly and be quiet. And so the throttleman... My job was primarily to get coffee for the rest of the people in the workstation where I worked because I had very little to do.
It still sounds like it to be on a submarine that long still seems fascinating in some ways. But what about the whole aspect of the lack of space?
Well, that's again that's part of the whole conditioning process. If you're on an aircraft carrier is huge. But if you go to your workstation, you're in a compartment that's probably not much bigger than where the compartment I was in. And on an aircraft carrier, you very seldom see the sky. On a submarine, you're so busy. You're either busy on watch, or you're busy doing maintenance or an upkeep, or you're having a meal or sleeping. So they keep you busy the whole time.
Now, you did that for 6 years, and after you left, what did you go on to do?
Yeah, I got out of the Navy, went to Western Michigan University, entered the business school. I was going to do finance, ended up switching to accounting. Because of the training I had in the Navy on how to focus on a task, how to stay focused and organized, I finished my remaining 3 years of college in 2 years. So I started in August of 67. I graduated in August of 69. And immediately, I think I graduated on a Friday, and on Sunday I flew off to my first job and left my wife and son at home while I went to a two-week training program and spent the rest of my career, 50-plus years, as a accounting and working in the finance area, primarily in manufacturing.
Wow. And did you? And how did you get to Eagle Point?
Well, when I retired, okay, I got to back up a little bit. When I went to San Diego in 1962, I couldn't believe how beautiful San Diego is and how beautiful California was. And I thought, why would anybody ever go back to Michigan when you could live in a place like this? So when I went through nuclear power training in Mare Island, which is in the Bay Area, it reinforced my sense of wanting to live and work and have a life in California. So after I graduated from Western Michigan University, the company I went to work for they had many offices around the country, but I got hired into the San Francisco office. And so I transferred from Kalamazoo, Michigan to San Francisco and lived in California for a long time. But as I was approaching retirement, I told my wife, you know, when we retire, we really need to leave California. So when I finally retired, we went on a search looking for a place to live, and we started out in Nevada, ended up in Arizona, lived in Arizona for 7 years, discovered a couple things. It's too far away from our kids who lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. We had a grandchild who was born, and then we decided we wanted to relocate. So we relocated as close as we could be to the kids in the Bay Area and still not be in California. So we ended up 40 miles north of the California-Oregon border.
And how long ago was that?
8 years ago.
All right. Now, you have you're involved, actually, I believe it was the president of the USSV Charitable Foundation. Tell me about that.
I was invited to take on the job as treasurer 3 years ago, and the old treasurer had been in that position for 10 years, and he had just reached the age of 82, and he needed to retire again. And so I understood that, and I took on the job as treasurer. And then this past August, late August, they appointed me as president of the Charitable Foundation. I'm extremely committed to the duties and the charter of what our charitable foundation does. We do a number of things to support submarine veterans and their families. For example, Hurricane Ian that just blew through Florida, we have of our parent organization, the United States Submarine Veterans Incorporated, we have almost 12,000 members, and of those, about 1,000 of them live in Florida. And in fact, where the hurricane blew into land right there by Fort Myers, we have three bases there with about 150 members between the three bases. A base is the same as a chapter. So we started a fundraising campaign to raise money to help out our any submarine veteran and their families that may have been damaged by the hurricane. And we raised $35,000 in less than 3 weeks. And then we've had two people ask for assistance, and we've mailed off checks to them to help them. Total of a little less than $5,000 in total. But we're ready to help out others. It's still too early. Insurance companies have to decide what's going on and how much is coverage and how much do they have to cover on their own. But that's one thing that we do. We've been doing a scholarship program since 1985. The last 2 years, we've offered scholarships to a little over 60 people per year for the last 2 years. We've offered scholarships to now more than 1,000 people who have received scholarships. These are partial scholarships, but we try to keep it as, you know, as helpful as we can. Then we have memorials and museum submarines that we help support, and have a library with over 2,500 titles in it. It's a research library. And so that's the kind of thing that we do, and makes me proud to be a part of this.
How long has the organization been around?
The USSVI, our parent organization, has been around since 1986, I think it is. Our charitable foundation was chartered as a 501c3 in 2000. So our charitable organization is now 22 years old right now. Wow. And we have a very strong financial footing, and I see us going far into the future.
Talk about, as you look back on your time in the military, what's maybe the thing you're proudest of?
I strongly feel that the submarine force, specifically the nuclear power submarine force, is what caused peace to break out in the middle to late 80s. I believe that it caused the downfall of the Soviet Union, the breaking apart of the Soviet Union, and I believe that we are specifically responsible for maintaining whatever kind of peace you can call, say, we've had over the years. We have a very, very potent deterrent posture in the world, and I'm a part of that. I feel I feel committed to that. I feel like I own that. My participation, I feel proud of, and it makes me feel good.
Do you feel like a lot of people, maybe because the whole area of the submarine service may be hard to understand for the average person, that a lot of people don't realize how big the impact of those submarines can be?
I'm convinced of that. We are called the silent service, and we're not silent because we're silent for a number of reasons. One is we don't talk about what we've done. And that's the good news, is we don't want to talk about it. And the bad news is we don't talk about it, and so a lot of people don't know what we've done. It's a dilemma. So there's a new motto that I just saw it recently, and I really like it a lot. It's four words: unseen with the location. The spelling of seen is being on that scene, but we're there unseen, as you can't see us. So the submarine force is unseen, and I like that a lot because that defines us.
Now, how many folks do you have that are from the submarine service that are around Southern Oregon?
We started our base, our chapter. Again, we call them bases. We started that in July of 2014, and we were hoping to find maybe 12 or 15 people. And within about a year, we were up to 50, and then we grew up to 60. And we've kind of reached that point where every time we get above 60, someone passes on to their final reward, and so we'll drop below 60, and then we'll grow back up. And so right now we're at, I think we're at 56 or 57, and we know of a number of people that we're trying to bring on board, and we'll get them.
Well, the Douglas County Veterans Parade honoring those from the submarine service today. And Ken, it's been great to hear your story and find out more about your unseen work.
Thank you. I've enjoyed talking to you.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM.